You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have another wonderful show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Eveline Hartz. She is an RN in the Buffalo area, and she is also a certified holistic health coach, and she's a member of World on Your Plate, which is a conference that takes place every year. It's in its 13th year now, and it's a conference that focuses on food, nutrition, environment, farming, and politics. And she'll be on to talk to us about this year's event that's coming up on October 7th. So don't go anywhere, and she'll be on in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk to you about some things going on in and around the city, some things in the news that might be of interest to you, and some things that you can take action on. Every week, you know, I send out a newsletter that has petitions that you can sign and put ways that you can become active in issues that are important to us. This week, one of the things I wrote about was the GE apple that is scheduled to, that is being planted right now as we speak. You know, it's a genetically engineered apple that is designed to not turn brown when it's cut. And it's really kind of scary because the FDA does not test GE foods, as most of us know, before they enter the marketplace. They kind of wait to see and use us as guinea pigs, basically, and see how we do with it. The thing is, you know, the apple associations, they don't want the GE apple. Consumers don't want the GE apple. So, again, it's like, who wants the GE apple? And the only people that want it, or the only people that benefit from it, are the biotech companies. And that's just not right. And we need to do something about it again. So please sign the petition that's on my website. Let's try to keep this GE apple from, well, it's already going to enter the market, but right now, McDonald's, Wendy's, a couple other fast food places have said they will not purchase it. Burger King is still out there on the fence. I think they're planning on it. So this petition is to Burger King to let them know that we don't want them to add that to their list of bad foods. But just stay aware of it. You know that if you're buying sliced apples, you know, the whole issue of apples turning brown is to let us know if they're fresh or not. And there's natural ways of keeping apples from brown. Anyone who makes apple pies knows you put a little lemon on the apples, and that prevents it from turning brown. But bad pathogens can enter apples when they're old, and this will mask that. And so that's not really a good thing. So please sign that petition. Also, you know, we've all been talking about food waste so much, and one of the problems is the way that we label our foods, you know, the expiration dates and labeling, and that's really confusing. And we need to sign a petition for that and let the government know that we need to standardize how we do these date labeling and to not label things when it's not beneficial. So we want to get date labeling more standardized and have it make sense. And of course, you know, the whole labeling issue with GMO labeling has been, you know, we took a big hit this year when that was passed. You know, we want to have our foods labeled with genetically modified ingredients, and we're not going to give up the fight, even though Obama did pass that law so that it will preempt state laws. We still need to keep putting our voices out there and letting our government and representatives know that we do not want our foods to go without labeling, and that the labeling that they are proposing just is not adequate. So we need to keep up that fight. So please check out my my Take Action blog on iegreen.com. You can also sign up for my newsletter, and then you'll, you know, be kept up to date with that. Another thing that I wrote about this week that was really interesting is how they're starting to do gastro diplomacy, or using culinary traditions as ways to bridge the gap between nations. And this article is mostly about Korea, and or South Korea, and the way that they have promoted kimchi around the world and how they're using that to bridge gaps. But there's a whole new world out there of gastro diplomacy, and it sounds really exciting. I mean, there's so many ways that food connects us all, and that's one of the reasons that I'm in food, because it does make the connections between health, environment, people, cultures. There's so much that food addresses, and so this is just one more way of using food to bridge the gaps between differences. So check out that article. Some great things are going on in and around the city. On August 27th, there's a Manhattan Holistic Healing Day and Yoga Bazaar, and that's a free event being put out by the Manhattan Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about it either by going onto the Manhattan Chamber of Commerce website, or I have links on my website as well. August 30th, there's a food policy for breakfast series that goes on at Hunter College, and this one will be exciting because Naomi Starkman, who is the founder and editor of editor-in-chief of Civil East, will be there, and she'll be talking with Charles Plotkin, who is the executive director of the New York City Food Policy Center at Hunter College. So that should be a really interesting conversation, if you can make that. On my website, I also have a couple dance galas that are happening. One is on September 10th upstate in Cold Spring, New York, to benefit the Glenwood Center. Another one is a fundraiser for Slow Food East End to help their work in establishing gardens out there. And that's also on September 10th. So depending on where you are, you might be interested in some of those. September 17th is the second annual Massive Vegan Potluck taking place on the Great Lawn in Astoria Park from 1 to 5. That's a free event. There will be a DJ Pudge there playing some music. So that should be a fun event if you want to come out for that. There's a human resources boot camp for New York nonprofits that I want to tell you about. It's being sponsored by the Pro Bono Partnership and the Jackson Lewis Law Firm. And this is a one-day workshop for any nonprofits out there that are listening. This is a one-day workshop to help your human resources departments work through some of the nonprofit issues that you have. And it includes breakfast and lunch. And I know the Pro Bono Partnership, they've been guests on my show many times. They do amazing work helping nonprofits with legal counsel. So this is something worth checking out if you are a nonprofit and would benefit from this. September 30th, the Yale Food System Symposium is coming up. That also sounds like a great event worth checking out. So stay tuned for those. And again, I have a full list of events on my website. If you are involved in an event that you want me to help share and get the word out there, please send it to me at bhavani@iegreen.com, and I'd be happy to post it for you. Now I'd like to share my weekly recipe. Every week I share a recipe that I've made either during the week or one that people have tried and have asked me to share with them. So this is a spicy brown rice sesame noodles. I use organic brown rice noodles so that it is gluten-free. I use tamari instead of soy sauce so it's gluten-free, and it's really an exceptional recipe. And I'd like to share with you. I make it whenever I'm making it. The brown rice noodles really cook down, and I think you lose some of the weight. A pound of the brown rice spaghetti always looks less than a pound of wheat spaghetti, and I think a lot of the starch comes off when you're boiling it. And one of the tricks also when making the brown rice pasta is after you take it off of the out of the boiling water, you need to run it under some water, whether it's cold water or hot water, but to wash off the starch so that the noodles don't stick together and they separate. And so what you're left with is much feels like less than a pound. So I always make two boxes because this recipe is so delicious and it really goes fast. So two boxes of 2 1-pound packages of organic brown rice spaghetti. I use the Trader Joe's brand. It's less expensive than most of the ones you can find at Whole Foods, and it's really good. 1/4 cup of minced ginger, 1/4 cup of minced garlic, 1/2 cup of tamari, 1/4 cup of sherry, 1/2 cup of tahini, 1/2 cup of peanut butter, 1/4 cup of brown rice wine vinegar, 1/4 cup of a vegetable oil. You can use grapeseed oil. You can use canola oil. If you use canola oil, make sure it's organic, so that it's GMO-free. Canola is one of those ingredients or one of those one of the products that are always genetically modified unless they're organic or, say, non-GMO. 1/4 cup of dark sesame oil. And that's, you know, when you take the lid off of dark sesame oil, you can smell the sesame. That's how you know it's really, you know, being used as a seasoning, not just a cooking oil. 1/2 cup of honey, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of red pepper flakes, and that's optional. You know, the cayenne pepper gives it a tiny bit of a bite, but the red pepper flakes really, you know, gives it a really nice bite. But if you're doing this for kids, I'll sometimes leave that out. 2 stalks of scallions, which is for garnish after it's cooked, and 1 red pepper, also for garnish, and 1/2 cucumber. Seeds removed, sliced thin, also for garnish, along with 1/4 cup of chopped cilantro. If you're one of those people that don't like cilantro, you can, of course, substitute parsley. So you're going to start by cooking the organic brown rice noodles in a large pot, according to the directions, and you want to cook them al dente. So taste it, you know, till you get to that right consistency. You don't want them to be mushy because they have to hold up in the tossing and all. Drain them and then, like I said, run it under cold water, rinse off the starch, and stop the cooking process. And you gently toss it with your hands under the running water to really rinse it well. Meanwhile, you're going to combine the garlic, ginger, tamari, sherry, tahini, peanut butter, brown rice vinegar, the vegetable oil and sesame oil, the honey, salt, cayenne pepper, and the red pepper flakes if you're using it in a food processor, and pulse that together until well blended. Taste it and adjust the spices according to your taste. You can add more ginger or garlic if you'd like, a little more tamari if you'd like. Then you're going to pour the sesame sauce over the pasta. I usually find that this recipe is more sauce than I need, and I don't mind saving a little bit of this sauce to have for another stir fry or something. It's just such a great sauce. So you don't need to put all of the sauce on, but you can if you want it really saucy. Then you're going to toss in the chopped cilantro and toss that up. Garnish it with the scallions and the peppers and cucumber, and save a little bit of that cilantro to garnish right on top just to make it look beautiful. And that's it. Really delicious, loved by so many people. So, of course, I love feedback. So if you do make it, please let me know how you like it. And to all those people that have been asking me recently for the recipe, here it is. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Eveline Hart. As I said before, she's a certified holistic health coach, and she is a member of World on Your Plate. And I'm going to let her tell us more about World on Your Plate and the work that she's been doing. Eveline, are you with me?
Yeah. And thank you
having
me on your show. Thank you.
You're so welcome. So why don't you give us a little history before we go into the specifics of the event for this year. Tell us a little bit of how you got involved, your own story a little bit, how you got involved in food, and I know you're also a holistic health coach. Tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll go on to World on Your Plate.
Okay. Well, my food history really starts with my parents. I have two phenomenal parents that had an incredible history. They're from the Netherlands, and they were believers, very firm believers in healthy food with high-quality food. And so, you know, once I went to college, I didn't really pay that much attention. But then after I got married and I had my two girls, and I became very interested in the foods that they were eating, and I started to pay more attention, actually, to what was going on in the food. Are we still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So, anyway, I became more and more interested, and I was worried about the meats. We became vegetarian, and we did it as a whole family. I became involved in our local CSA, and then I went to one of the NOFA food conferences. And I, the CSA person, Steve Porter, who was a very terrific, wonderful farmer, and he had suggested that would be a good place to go to learn more about food issues. So I did. And it was quite an eye-opener. My whole family went. Ralph Nader was there. Madonna Shiva were the keynote speakers. And 200 workshops, all food-related.
What year is that?
That was in 2004.
Uh-huh.
And it was the first time that I attended anything like this. It was really a life-changing event, or at least a very eye-opening event. And I certainly haven't thought of food in the same way them. And what I came away with was that, you know, we don't just eat food. That piece of meat that you put on your plate has a history. The vegetable that you have on your plate has a history. And unless you take care of the soil, you're not going to have a healthy vegetable. You're not going to have healthy meat products. And how we treat the soil, how we treat the environment is going to affect the soil, and then, of course, you get all the fair and equitable trade issues. War is devastating on our food supply because it really destroys the land. So all of a sudden, you're not just looking at the food on your plate, but you're looking at politics and technology and GMOs, as you mentioned, the oil industry, pollution, climate change, just about everything you can think of starts having a connection with food. And it's our food is affected by all those things, and then at the same time, everything we do to our environment is going to affect the food, you know, that we're able to purchase or use or put on our plates. So that's, I'm a nurse, I'm an RN. I work mostly in oncology and then later in hospice. And my own personality doesn't do very well with emergencies and disasters. I'm much more of a, you know, kind of laid back, think about things kind of person. So emergencies and cleaning up after the fact really wasn't my kind of thing. And so the obvious solution to that is to prevent the problem in the first place. So I'm really all for the prevention of disease and disability. And of course, one of the primary things to look at is our food, you know, food and exercise. And so that's...
Yeah, I use the analogy a lot. You know, you were talking about if you don't have healthy soil, you're not going to have a healthy vegetable or healthy meat or anything that comes from the soil. And, you know, you can use the analogy of, you know, a pregnant mom. I mean, we all know that, you know, a baby is going to be much healthier if the mom has eaten well than if the mom hasn't eaten well. And it's the same way the vegetable coming out of the soil. That's its food. That's its source of health. And if it's, you know, being raised on synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, it's not going to be the same vegetable and have the same nutritional value as a vegetable coming from soil that is really enriched with compost and manure and healthy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not entities unto ourselves. You know, we within our bodies, host over 300 million bacteria. Actually, I think we have more bacteria in our bodies than we have cells that make us, you know, who we are. So those bacteria have a symbiotic relationship with us. If those bacteria aren't healthy, then it affects our health. So it's really the circle of life.
Mm-hmm.
And, At one time, we used to make our own vitamin B12, but we've lost those bacteria. So now, you know, those bacteria are no longer in our gut, and now we're dependent on other sources for that. And, you know, who knows what else that we're doing. And I think that's one of the problems with GMOs, too, when you insert an alien genetic snippet into a species, that snippet isn't quite as strong, and if that is transcripted into the bacteria that are in our gut, that could very well create problems. You know, we don't know. It's scary, the GMO. I find it very scary. You know, there are some good points. Humulin insulin, which is genetically engineered, seems to be doing pretty well. But that doesn't mean we can just give a blanket okay to anything that's genetically engineered.
Right, right. And it's scary that the FDA doesn't test any of these things. I mean, I find that so shocking. And that they really allow us to be the guinea pigs, you know, 10 years out. How are we doing, you know? And if you look at the correlation of when genetically modified ingredients really entered into the food system, and you look at the level of autoimmune diseases and things going on with people's health, it really makes you wonder, you know? There's no money to do all the testing because the people that have the money are the biotech companies, and they control the results of any testing they do. So if it's not an advantageous result, they can, you know, keep it from entering the market. So it's really scary.
Yeah, I think less than 1% of all monies for biotech look at any possible adverse effects, and that's really, for a new technology, that's pretty awful. That's very scary. But they, you know, the biotech company has big pockets, very deep pockets, so they are able to call all the shots. And with this whole labeling business, it's actually pretty incredible. Here they have a mandatory labeling law that is the most non-labeling, you know, legislation that I could have imagined anyone dreaming up. I mean, how do you dream up something that is but really isn't? And they
right.
did it.
Right. A code that requires you to first scan it and go to another site to find out. I mean, it's ridiculous. And it's also, you know, going to be a socioeconomic divide. Not everybody has smartphones. And so if you don't have a smartphone, you're really in a
pickle,
you know?
I do have a smartphone, but it doesn't read that app. So you have to have one of the newer smartphones. That makes it, you know, even more financially unfeasible for many, many people.
Oh, really? So the app is only good for some of the newer phones?
Well, it doesn't work on my phone. I have one of the old iPhones.
Right. Right. You're probably right. I hadn't even thought of that. So if you went to NOFA in 2004, it seems like this event that you're very involved in, World on Your Plate, started just a little bit after that, because you're in your 13th year now, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The committee actually kind of evolved out of 9/11. You know, after 9/11, our Peace Center, the Western New York Peace Center, started several efforts and committees to, and one of those was Visions for a Better World. And that was created to make the world a better place. And part of that was the food aspect. There was a group that was interested in centering the peace and justice issue around food. And I joined that group in 2004. So it had already been ongoing for a while, but they hadn't really done any public programs. And so I was on that committee. It was an amazing committee because I was very involved with the Girl Scouts at that time, and they were very vocal and very loud and kind of in-your-face kind of group.
Can I ask you a question? A Vision for a Better World, is that something that was just in your area, or is this a national movement?
I believe it was just in our area. It was because it was under our Peace Center, so it was the Western New York Peace Center.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, done.
No, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to interrupt you, so I was apologizing, but you can continue.
So this committee was made up of a group of people who were very prominent in the community, and they really made things happen. And but anyways, they hadn't done anything public yet. And then I went to the NOFA conference, and I came back totally energized and very excited. And I think that was just the shot they needed to get the first World on Your Plate up and going. And we did have it that October. The NOFA conference was in August, and we had our first World on Your Plate conference in October of that year. And it was at a UCC church, Pilgrim St. Luke's. That was a very lovely church. We had a migrant farm worker issues presented. We talked about community-supported agriculture, and fair trade coffee was introduced, you know, how to get that into your churches and into your homes. And our local CSAs, Porter Farms, Thorpe Farms, and Native Offerings generously donated organic produce for the event, and we brought food. We had a couple of vendors and some, you know, all local fair trade vendors, some informational tables, and it was a lot of fun. And so we continued to do that, and every year it grew. The following year we had a speaker and then offered three workshops. The year after that, we went to First Presbyterian Church, which is a beautiful historical church in downtown Buffalo, a very classic, beautiful building. And we expanded our workshop topics, and we had four organic farmers at that time. And so throughout the years, it's growing, and it's been very exciting. We are now hosted by Damon College, which is in Amherst, New York, and going into our 13th year.
Sounds great. And how big is it now? Like, how many people do you expect at this next one?
Well, it's between 200 and 300 people is what we're hoping for, and that's about what we get, about 200 or so people, depending. We do charge for a program. I know sometimes, as well, at least here, we have a VegFest. I believe that's a vegan festival, which you talked about last week, your speaker, about having free events versus events that you have to pay for. But one way or another, events need to get paid for, and it's either, you know, we have a very strong peace and justice vantage, and unfortunately, most of the small businesses and organizations that are involved with that don't have a lot of money. So we can't really expect those organizations to pay for the event. So the other option is, you know, for people that are attending to pay, and along with, you know, sponsorships and all that. And
so what is the fee for getting in?
It's $30 for pre-registration, $35 at the door. It is free to students with ID, and if they register online. We do have scholarships available, so anyone who is unable to pay, if they were to ask for a ticket, they would get a free ticket. There's really no questions asked. So we are pretty lenient, and nobody is actually ever turned away. And for those folks who can only come Friday, it's $10. And that includes, you know, there's an organic vegetarian lunch that's served. We have food throughout the day. There's a celebration in the evening, and you know, we're having a seed exchange, there's raffles, there's all sorts of activities, there are workshops. So I think people are getting quite a bit for the cost.
Right, right. So we have a similar event, or have had a similar event, although it's not every year. The first 2 years it was called the Small Farm Summit on Long Island. And then the last year we had it, we just called it the Long Island Food Conference, which seemed like the title was more appropriate because we weren't so much really about farming as much as about food as yours is, you know, about food, the environment, politics, that kind of thing. And, yeah, it's just so great to put on an event, but I know the amount of work it takes. And we, too, wanted to make it free and did not have the funding to be able to afford to do that. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge because it would be lovely to have it free. But I'm glad to see that for you it was free for students.
Yeah.
And is that from any school, just students from Damon College, or what about Buffalo State and Buffalo University? Mm-hmm. Free for that?
Any student. Yeah, any students, college students, whoever. If you have a student ID, you can come in for free. And this year we did get a Riefler grant, which is which gave us you know, a nice chunk of money to give out free tickets. So we have that option too. So our workshop representatives will be able to bring friends along, and maybe some of the people in the community that haven't been able to go because they have found it too expensive, especially some of the local urban farmers, and so we're giving those people tickets as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really exciting.
Uh-huh. And do you partner with the colleges at all? Like, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, Buffalo has so many colleges. How much involvement do you get from the student body?
We don't get a lot of students. We keep hoping. We really tried, especially in the beginning, to have, you know, workshops and things for the young people, but they haven't been coming. I know some of the people on our board are professors, and they have offered, you know, all sorts of incentives, extra credit and such for their college students that come and participate or to volunteer. So that brings in a few college students, but there's not a whole lot, which is a bit discouraging. But, you know,
We found a similar thing. We had...
Oh, you did?
You know, yeah, we had it at Hofstra University. And so, you know, and it was free, of course, to students as well. And we had some kids coming, but not the type of interest one would expect when we know food politics and food issues are becoming so big around the country in colleges. I really was surprised, you know. I was very surprised. And I was, you know, I was partly asking to see what you were doing to try to engage students, because that's, you know, a challenge, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's the young people who need to get there.
A few years ago, we had an instructor who came specifically to attract students. And I think there were a lot of adults that came to listen to what he had to say, and again, not many students.
Uh-huh.
So it's a bit of a puzzle. Now, that first conference we went to, my girls at that time were in junior high or thereabouts, and yeah, I think they were 10 and 12 or so, or whatever age you are at that time, middle school. And they it was the first time they went on their own. NOFA has a huge, you know, following for young people. They do their own thing, and it's all about food issues, too. But at their level, and my girls loved it. And so, you know, I thought it would be easy to attract kids here as well, but it isn't. So that is a little bit discouraging. And as far as college-age students, that's, I don't know. Perhaps it just happens, it has to do with the school. You know, maybe if the school was more focused towards holistic food issues and sustainable agriculture, perhaps there would be more students. Or perhaps they're just tired and don't want to attend because they already have so many classes, and this is more educational than it is actually fun. I mean, we do try to keep it fun and light and entertaining, but obviously our speakers have serious things they talk about, and our workshop presenters also, you know, it tends to be on the serious side.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a puzzle. let's take a couple minute break, and when we come back, I'd like to actually delve into this year's conference, World on Your Plate, and you can tell us about some of the highlights, some of the workshops you have planned, and of course, I know Frances Moore-Lappe is your keynote speaker, and we can talk about her.
Yeah.
As well. Okay.
Yeah,
so everyone. Yeah. Don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Emmeline Hart about World on Your Plate, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and I'll be right back.
Listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
This is Mike Fader. Let me tell you about PRN.FM. It's a whole new world of broadcasting. PRN has absolutely no question the best political and economic shows on the radio. Plus, PRN tops every other station in its health and wellness program. Cooking, music, book reviews, sex advice, you name it, we have it. I'm going to tell you this one time. You need to listen to our programming, okay? All right? Don't make me come down here.
Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy, the host of Connect the Dots. We're with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. On Connect the Dots, I connect the dots between your personal health and your total health environment with a whole group of experts, advocates, activists, and wise people that connect the dots between what goes on in our total world and how it affects health. Be with us every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time for Connect the Dots. Progressive Radio Network, we're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And Emmeline Hart is here with me today talking about the conference she has up in the Buffalo area called World on Your Plate. Emmeline, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So let's talk about this year's conference. First, when is it?
This year, it's October 7th, starting at 5 o'clock. That's registration, 5:30 with the light dinner. So, and then it'll go till about 9 o'clock, and on Saturday, October 8th, it's an all-day event.
Okay. So it's a two-day event.
Yeah.
And what time is it on Saturday?
Saturday starts at, registration starts at 8:30, and welcome and introductions are at 9 o'clock. Matthew Goldfarb is going to be until 5 o'clock, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. And when is Frankie coming, Frances Moore-Lappe? When does she speak?
She is going to be speaking at 2:30.
On Saturday?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So it's in the middle of the day?
Yeah.
That she speaks, uh-huh. Okay, and tell us about some of the other speakers that you have. For those of you that don't know, let me just say, Frances Moore-Lappe, also known as Frankie by her friends, she is the author of Diet for a Small Planet, which was so far ahead of its time. It was the first book that I read that inspired me to give up eating meat and set my path on a food path, basically. It was just amazing, her book, Diet for a Small Planet. There was nothing else like that at that time. And, you know, now there's many other books, but she went on to found the Institute, what is it called, Small Planet Institute.
Small Planet,
and she runs that with her daughter, Anna Lappe, and they are just a force. They're just doing great work. So if you are in the Buffalo area and you can get there to hear her speak, I really recommend it. But anyway, Emmeline, maybe you can share with us some of the other highlights that you have coming up for the event.
Okay. Well, Friday evening should be very exciting. The New York Organic Action Plan Roundtable is coming, which is facilitated by Elizabeth Henderson of NOFA New York. They are looking to determine where the future of organic is going in New York State. They're looking to see how we can create a socially just food farming system, a system that works, that's sustainable, that's environmentally resilient, and is also profitable for our farmers. Sometimes I think some of the farmers feel that when we talk about sustainability, we forget about the economics, but we need our farmers to thrive just as any other person in the community. So that's going to happen at 7:15. And then prior to that, we're having a panel discussion. It's titled Farm to Market Issues and Challenges. And we are having several prominent members of our community. Tom Zulis is going to be our facilitator. He was actually an industrial engineer and investment broker, and he founded Singer Farms Natural with his wife and are growing organic garlic and potatoes and other vegetables. And he is the facilitator. Jim Bittner, who is a longtime farmer, owner of Bittner Singer Farms. He is very active in both the Farm Bureau and in NOFA. He will be there. Tim Bartlett, who is a general manager of our Lexington Co-op in Buffalo. Bridget O'Brien Wood, who is the director of the Buffalo Public School Food Service. And Ken Parker, who is an indigenous horticulturist and native plant consultant. And then also Erin Rakowski, who is he established a regional farm market group and is very active in numerous farmers markets, and he has been with the farmers market in my particular area for over 10 years. And these people are going to talk a little bit about their particular expertise in the farm to market issue, because, you know, as a mother, as a nurse, I am mostly concerned with that food that I have on my plate, you know, that physical food, and all the things that happen beforehand. I don't know all the ins and outs, and what I look at and think, well, that would be an easy solution, is not at all an easy solution in the current political system, and, you know, as far as how things are being already done in the farming business. So the panel discussion is to bring light to the various aspects of farm to market, and then we can have a more intelligent conversation with Elizabeth Henderson at the round table when we try to figure out what the New York plan is going to be for organics. So that's mm-hmm. Friday. We will start with a light dinner. We always have food. Food is mostly vegetarian. It's as organic as possible, and sometimes it's we have people who donate, and other times we make it ourselves, or we have a potluck. And then on Saturday we'll start with our welcome and introduction, Matthew Goldfarb of Fruition Seeds, which is a
seed company. So where's Matthew from?
They are in central New York in the Ithaca area.
What is his farm?
I'm having trouble hearing you. I'm sorry.
I said, what is the name of his farm?
Fruition Seeds.
Matthew Goldfarb.
Fruition Seeds. And he and his partner are both farmers, and then branched out into growing vegetables for seed production. And his topic is resilient seeds in a changing climate.
Okay.
And
do you have one presenter at a time?
Yes. Well, yes. Our workshops, we have several. We have two sessions of about 8 to 9 workshops each. But our speakers, Matthew Goldfarb and Frances Morlepay, are just, they're on their own. So everybody will be there and be able to hear them speak.
Oh, that's nice. And what time is Matthew? Is he open at 9 o'clock in the morning?
9:15, yeah. Welcome at 9 o'clock. and his talk will be at 9:15. And then his partner will be doing a workshop on saving your own garden seeds afterwards. So that should be exciting. I heard them both in a workshop they did for NOFA, and they're wonderful. They're very knowledgeable. They're good speakers. It's exciting and fun, so I'm looking forward to it. He may not be so well known right now, but I bet you in the future he will be.
He will be.
He's someone to keep in mind.
And what kind of workshops do you have lined up?
Well, quite a variety. We have, public transportation. We have a registered dietitian, Sue Kelleher, doing a workshop on glyphosate, the most widely used pesticide in the world. We've got plant-based nutrition, saving seeds, of course, emotional freedom techniques. The Climate Justice Coalition is going to be talking about the relationship between food and climate change. Push Buffalo, which is a group that started with housing. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but the person is going to speak about stormwater management, green infrastructure, and sustainable landscaping. So our housing, though we don't usually connect that with food, but certainly how we build and what kind of turf we have and type of gardens we have make a big difference to our environment and so to our food supply. We'll have someone talking about bees. We're going to have Goldfarb Financial. We'll be speaking on socially responsible and sustainable investing. We have one of our master gardeners coming to speak on lessons from the garden. That's Patricia Hull. And the Western New York chapter of the American Meteorological Society and Weather Medic Incorporated is also going to be talking about climate change and food security from a little different vantage point as the previous one. We have a wonderful world of heirloom beans, the history and growing and eating of beans. This is the year of the pulses, the international year of the pulses. So this a subject about beans is very appropriate. Gandhi Earth Keepers International, George Payne will be talking about food culture and the violence of euphemisms. We have a Weston Price person coming to talk about better health through Weston Price principles. Carol Polliner, who is very excellent. We have finally fermented food. And we also have a young man, Robert Schuller, who is coming from Cornell University. He was a recent student, and he's going to be talking about GMOs, Monsanto, and higher education. And I'm particularly interested in what he has to say because Cornell is very, very heavy into the GMOs, and they have Cornell Alliance that is actually a front for the biotech industry and has recruited a lot of students from all over the world to teach them how to present GMOs to the world. And I'm looking forward to see what this young man has to say.
Yeah, I always find that a conflict. You know, you always hear, you know, when you have questions about gardening, people say, oh, reach out to your Cornell Cooperative Extension. And, you know, I'm always in the back of my mind thinking, you know, well, Cornell is so, you know, in cahoots with Monsanto and GMOs. It's hard to know where the separation is and when they're in bed together, you know?
Yes, yes. And, you know, you're kind of lulled into it because it's so exciting when you see what they're looking at and thinking of doing and how they can help. And it's so easy to be lulled in complacency and not think about the horrible ramifications of genetically engineering, you know, our food supply. As though that's all there is to life or to food. I mean, we're much more than just DNA, and we know so little. Who knows what we're actually doing?
Right, right. Well, the workshops seem fascinating, too. And so you'll have two different sessions of workshops where you have eight or so going on at a time, did you say?
Yeah, so there'll be it's about 8 or 9 workshops going on at once, and people would choose one. And we do close the hall where we have our vendors at that time so that everybody who comes to the event will be able to attend the workshop. And then the hall will be opened again once the workshops are done. And then we serve an organic lunch. The lunch is a big part of the event. Our organic farmers from the area donate food, and we only started out with those 3 farmers, but the CSAs, the Community Supported Agriculture in the area, has really expanded, and that's very exciting. So we have quite a few people donating, and then the Damon has a food service, and the food service, then they have no idea what they're getting, but it comes in a day or two beforehand, and they come up with a wonderful meal.
Cool. And does that Slow Food Buffalo, are they involved?
Whole Foods is not in Buffalo. They did purchase some land, and I believe there might be opening next year sometime. They haven't started the build yet. Our big store here that has a lot of organic foods is our Wegmans store. Our local Wegmans store has what's called Nature's Market, and they really have quite a bit of organics and so-called healthy products. But I think you have mentioned also that not everything supposedly organic is necessarily healthy. We still have a lot of processed food, which leaves something to be desired. But
right.
they're prominent, and they did support us. They did give us a little bit of money last year, and that was very helpful.
No, but I thought you have a. Isn't there a Slow Food chapter in your area?
No foods here. No.
Ah.
Interesting.
Well, we have
enough
to work on that. Yeah, we have to work on that. You should start one. Slow Food. You're familiar with Slow Food, right?
Oh, of course. Because my daughter lived in New York City for a while, and that's where we stop. And we go to Whole Foods, and we.
No, Slow Food. Slow Food is. I'm not saying Whole Foods. I'm saying Slow, S-L-O-W.
Oh, Slow Foods.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Slow Food has been involved. They are not this year, and actually I don't think they were last year either, but they have been involved in the past. They had a very active chapter and for a while, and I'm not really sure what's going on with Whole Foods.
Yeah,
right now.
Right. I chair our local Slow Food chapter here on Long Island, and we're very involved, you know, both through I Eat Green and Slow Food in our food conference down here. And it just seems like everything that you're having there is slow food oriented. And so you might want to try to reach out to them again because they can help promote it for you. And they should be there presenting, you know. I don't know if I know you said you also have socially responsible investing. Is that through Slow Money, or that's on its own?
No, this is a private broker who does sustainable investing, and that's what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't know of anyone else in the area who does anything, you know, like that. But you know, I find this very important because people have their 401ks now and have no idea what it is they're investing in. And sometimes you don't really have any choice in what you're investing in. And, you can believe all you want in healthy foods and in peace and in justice, but if your portfolio doesn't reflect that, then, you know, what are you doing? And unfortunately, a lot of the things that, that do well in the stock market are also those things that are oil related, or they're weapons related, or big ag related, or pharmaceutical related, and that's
those are all areas we don't want to support and have our money involved in. I agree with you. I've had shows, talking about socially responsible investing, and it is so important, and luckily, it's starting to enter the mainstream consciousness a little bit more. People are starting to think about it. 350.org has been so big on
you know, trying to push schools to divest from oil and, you know, fossil fuel companies, and are doing a good job at getting students involved in that. So it's happening, but all these things, yeah, as both you and I can say, you know, having had some perspective of time, we can see things, you know, they move slowly, but they are moving. And we just have to stay hopeful and all that stuff. Anyway, before we run out of time, Evelyn, can you share with everybody the website for World on Your Plate and how they would find out more information or how they can contact you if they have questions?
Sure. World on Your Plate is www.worldonyourplate.org, all together. And I can be reached through email. That's aehartv@roadrunner.com.
Wonderful.
And yes. And I appreciate you having
me
on
really
the show.
It's been really wonderful having you as a guest. I wish you the best of luck for this year's event. It sounds really awesome. Wish I could be there. Maybe I can get up there. I'm not sure. But if I can, I will come. But good luck with you all.
Thank you.
And everyone out there, you're welcome. You're welcome. And everyone out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.